You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, we talk to Arlington Martin head coach Bob Wager, the high school head coach of Miles Garrett, who did declare for the 2017 NFL draft and will forego his senior season at Texas A&M. We'll also say a few words for the recently passed 2016 Texas A&M football season, a little eulogy for that, and we will get into some of the basketball woes that the Texas A&M men's basketball team has suffered as of late. A little bit of a downer of a podcast this week, but that's okay. Stick with us, because I know this man will get us through. The guy across the counter from me, the great president, Zachary Taylor.
We're going to get through this together, guys. That's what's important. Because without each other, where are we?
I know.
We're by ourselves.
Right. Or so, in a room by ourselves doing a podcast.
Or by ourselves doing a podcast or doing it via Skype. So thank goodness we have each other today to talk about all these terrible, awful, no good things coming on. But yeah, as Travis mentioned, we will be joined by Arlington Martin High head football coach Bob Wager. Always a good time talking with him.
Good dude. Okay, so Zach, I had to bring this to the podcast. It's something that you've been all about on social media, and that is the phenomenon, the scientific research that's gone into the Southern Mother's crosswall.
Oh, yes, I almost completely forgot about that. Yeah, so is it me? Or, I don't know, does your mama have a crosswall?
Okay, now this is what is scaring me more. I personally have a crosswall.
You have a crosswall.
So maybe I'm a Southern
mother. So you're a little
mother.
Southern. You got a little Southern mama to you.
Yeah, something like that.
So yeah, my mother has one, and pretty much a lot of my friends' mothers have one. And it's basically where you have a wall that has several crosses of different decorations, different shapes and sizes. Well, they're all kind of the same shape, but they're different sizes. and I actually had a friend that sent me, and I put this over social media, and I had a friend who sent me a picture of her mother's, and it's a big cross, but it's made out of a bunch of little crosses.
Ooh.
And then I also
cross-ception.
Right. And then I also have a friend whose mother has an Aggie cross to go along with the rest of her crosses. So And whenever you're looking over pictures and things like that in social media, you see all these folks taking pics inside their house, and a lot of times you'll find a wall somewhere in the picture that has them.
Well, here's the fun part about this. So we're periscoping right now, as we normally do our first segment, and my mother is actually watching the periscope right now.
Mrs.
So, Mom,
Brown,
if you are at home, you should take a picture of our cross wall and text it to me, and I will tweet that out as a part of the whole podcast experience.
I guess I could tweet mine out, right? Because my mother sent me one already.
We're getting questions in here about crosswalls. What are the requirements to have a crosswall? What age do you start having
for the
a crosswall?
Oh, I've got friends who are my age that have kids,
right?
That have them already.
I mean, I have a bunch of now. Granted, I haven't like fully unpacked from my move down here, but like I have the makings for a crosswall in a box somewhere.
Yeah,
that could happen, and so I am a 29-year-old male. So.
Well, I'm gonna save this photo, and I'm now gonna put it out on the Twitterverse.
Okay.
At Zach Taylor Sport, because I couldn't do sports because it doesn't allow that many characters. Hold on.
So yeah, crosswall going up on the Twitter. If your mom has
hashtag
has the crosswall.
Mama's crosswall.
Oh yes.
Way,
oh yes.
We started.
My mom,
hashtag.
who is now periscoping at me or chatting with me, they are at the hospital because I have a new baby niece that's about to be born.
Hey,
so
congrats.
Welcome to the world, baby Scarlet, I believe is the
Scarlet.
Name.
Scarlet,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, the phenomena of the Southern Mother Crosswall is something that we are doing some serious investigative journalism on.
I imagine Scarlet will eventually be a Southern.
I mean, yeah,
with the wind, right?
Right.
You can't, yeah.
Right. Exactly. She will have so many crosses.
So many crosses
on that crosswall.
Walls.
Now that segues nicely into a kind of a medium, midway ground between Southern Mother's Cross Walls and, you know, football, the next thing.
Yeah,
and that is the Fantasy Football League that I'm in with some friends of mine up in Dallas. It's a church league, which will make this make a little bit more sense. But actually, we have, I don't know if you've ever seen the show The League.
Yes.
They have a trophy for whoever gets last place in their league. And so we actually don't even have a trophy for whoever gets first place. We only have a trophy for who gets last place.
Okay.
Because most of the people in the league don't watch football. I'm one of the few. And our last place trophy, if you will, is this horrendous, god-awful cross that we found at a market or something somewhere that has a body on it kind of in the shape of a crucifix, like you would have the crucified Jesus on it, but it is a football running back in kind of a Heisman position as well.
What?
With little footballs carved into it. And so this is where decorative crosses go too far.
Yeah.
Way too far. Therefore, making kind of the perfect last place trophy for a church fantasy football league.
Oh, man.
So whoever loses has to hang that in their house.
Did you finish last?
2 years in a row.
Wow. And this is the thing, all right? I play fantasy football. I play in about three different leagues. But it's so much more luck than skill.
Right.
Obviously, there is some skill to it. You have to have some sense. But whether or not you're going to luck into having a good running back or not, whether or not they're going to have a good season or not,
right.
I suck at fantasy football. But I know, I think, I'm not saying my friends don't know more sports than the average person, but I think I know more than most of them.
Right. Well, and this was an 18-team league because we didn't say no to really anybody.
And you came in last place in an 18-team league?
If your first-round draft pick gets injured, which happened 2 years in a row,
my gosh.
There's no one to... You almost have to just have an empty hole in your roster.
Yeah,
Now, it's fun because of the trash-talking, so that makes it worthwhile.
With the church people.
The church people, of course. Our pastor was actually the worst, the most vicious trash-talker. Out of all of them.
Wow.
Shout out to Mike Bachman up there at Union. So anyway, that segues again into football. We just ended a football season with the Texas A&M Fighting Aggies with a loss in the Texas Bowl down there in Houston to Kansas State. And I think we decided that we needed to say a few words for this season that was just taken from us so suddenly. So
yeah.
I don't know. Do you want me to start, or do you want to... Do you want to go first?
Just kind of let me collect myself a little bit. So you go ahead and go ahead.
All right. So I jotted down a few notes here. I have some things to say here. I'm gonna go kind of on a script here. So anyway, eulogy to the 2016 Texas A&M football season. You were so young, so vibrant when you began. You were born again at an early age, bringing in Trevor Knight for life and some spiritual guidance in this new life of yours. You're so hopeful. You're so full of life until you weren't. You succumbed to the things of this world, namely the state of Mississippi, and eventually tailspinned into your demise. So, in honor of you, this 2016 A&M season that gave A&M fans so much hope before just ripping it away so carelessly and needlessly, let's all join hands, raise them to the sky, and in unison let out a resounding meh.
Meh.
Thank you.
You know, I was very young whenever I first met Aggie football, and you know, the fact that in 2016, only 122 years old. I mean, in the prime of life, really. But it seems like 2016 Aggie football gotten a little slower. It was harder to make tackles on defense than it had been in the past. And, you know, credit that to old age, I don't know. Just seemed like their reaction time just wasn't quite there. But, you know, 2016 Aggie football loved his quarterbacks. I mean, he loved his quarterbacks. But the only problem was they kept leaving him. And he had one, a good one in Trevor Knight, but knew it wasn't going to last forever. It was just going to be a year or so. And, you know, the thing about Aggie football is Aggie football liked to party, okay? Liked to drink a lot. and also made those around him drink a lot, especially whenever he didn't, you know, match up to their expectations. So for that being said, there was a lot of drinking going on in 2016. You know, and what an untimely demise that 2016 Aggie football had. I mean, that old man down the road up north in the Northern Subdivision who owned that Wildcat, and it got loose and attacked Aggie football and killed it.
That crazy old man.
That crazy old man owning that Wildcat wearing purple. Actually, you know what the crazy thing was? Is the stupid cat got loose of its leash and ran to Aggie football's neighborhood. Actually, on his front lawn. Mm-hmm. And killed him.
And Aggie football kind of said, get off my lawn.
Yeah, but it was too late. The Wildcat was too much. You know, behind, I don't know, I kept saying Ertz. I don't know. I didn't even know Wildcats could talk. And but thankfully, though, Aggie football's legacy will live on. It survived, of course, by the 12th man and the love of its life, Billy Lucci.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Aggie football.
Well, anyway, moving to the actual Texas Bowl.
By the way, we love Luch. By the way, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I think Robert Cessna could get added to that.
Yeah,
list.
Cease, the crazy Cease could too.
Crazy, you know, great uncle.
Yeah, yeah, the uncle that says all the inappropriate things at holiday parties.
Yeah, basically.
That's Robert Cessna. Yeah.
So, you looking at the Texas Bowl though, It's kind of hard to. I mean, it really was a little bit of a microcosm of the entire season. I mean, they couldn't stop the run, especially the running quarterback on defense. The offense sputtered at times, and kind of when it was all on the line, and you have the ball in the hands of your quarterback that you want to be running things out there, you can't convert on third down, and ultimately that kind of did him in.
Well, after what fans have seen in the second half of the season, that performance should have been, you know, come as no surprise. I mean, it's, hey, look, we're recording. Awesome.
Good.
Fantastic. Had to double check. I was getting a little tight there in my throat. It shouldn't have come as any surprise that their performance the way it was. It kind of came as expected, actually. When you look at those two teams on the field, I think A&M is the more talented one. And that's not a knock necessarily against Kansas State. They just don't recruit these tremendously talented guys, but they get it done. And they were out-coached, by the way, A&M was, because Bill Snyder is a freaking genius wizard who sucks the life out of his opponents and has stayed the same, looked the same way for the past 25 years.
It's actually how he stays looking the same. Yeah. He kind of sucks that life force out.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Uses it.
He was 77 whenever he first started coaching at Kansas State. And then now he's like
65.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but that's, A&M was out coached. It, that kind of became a recurring factor a lot throughout the season. Trevor Knight, actually, all things considered, had a pretty good game by his standards. He really did. I don't think anybody could sit there and try and blame him. That being said, I think Kansas State did a very good job. And holy cow, is Pringle like the fastest dude on the planet? I mean, he burned Nick Harvey
But we've seen that happen really, multiple really times this season.
Which, by the way, getting a little bit into the recruiting aspect, A&M, and I think it's a long shot at this point, but Kendall Sheffield is a guy that they desperately need.
Over there at Blinn.
Because Nick Harvey, unless he is... Now, Oliver played pretty good. I will give him that. Oliver, for being a freshman, played pretty good at corner. But, man, Nick Harvey was getting burned. And you notice you didn't see a lot of Deshaun, if at all, any Deshaun Capers-Smith. And he's another guy who got torched. So, yeah, it was...
Three notes I have from the game. One... because Richard Moore was injured and because Claude George was injured, Atari Alaka and Sean Washington had to play the entire game, which is something that they haven't done this season. There's been a pretty constant rotation at linebacker throughout the season. Also, you have the little back and forth battle between, I believe it's Stark was the cornerback's name, and Josh Reynolds.
Oh yeah,
that was fun. That was kind of fun. That might have been the most interesting part of the game, is to kind of watch that back and forth that you had. him knock away the kind of Hail Mary pass at the end of the first quarter. They were jawing before that, and then he kind of made an inappropriate plié onto Reynolds.
He put his dingles on Reynolds' berries.
There you go. Yeah. And then you had Reynolds scoring the touchdown and kind of looking over him as he scored. It was fun. I was hoping that Reynolds would be in the press conference because that's kind of what I wanted to do for my little story for the game, is the game within the game between those guys. And then finally, and this is what I want to kind of close out the segment with, is what the thing that a lot of people are talking about, and that was that decision in the start of the fourth quarter to attempt a 52-yard field goal, yeah, instead of going for it on fourth and four?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked with Sumlin about that afterwards. He said, well, look, LaCamera was making them in pregame. He was making them in the middle of the game. But even then, I don't think that that's – I understand he's wanting to get some momentum with some points. But I believe at that time they were still down by more than seven, were they not? Or maybe it might have been somewhere. No, I don't think they were ever really that far separate.
No.
But they were still down by more than three, obviously. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to tie it up. So, yeah, they really needed to go for it, I think. But, again, hindsight is 20/20. If he makes that kick, then you might be thinking differently about Kevin Sumlin and the decision that he made, but that's a lot to ask from a guy.
Sure. Here's my thought process too, though. It's something, just kind of one of those intangible things. We talked a lot, me and Robert Cessna and our Periscopes and stuff throughout the week. We talked a lot. I think we even talked about it on the podcast here last, the Monday podcast from last week. The Kansas State came in with so much more energy than Texas
yeah.
A&M.
They
when they did the Rodeo Bowl, when they did the luncheon and a little sing-off happened, they were in it with their teammates. They were excited. They wanted to win. A&M was kind of looking at their phones, doing, you know, puppy Snapchat filters, you know, and taking pictures and looking at Twitter and whatever else, and not really engaged. And I think that even Bill Snyder kind of mentioned that he thought that played into it a little bit, that they came in with a little bit more energy through the week, and that translated into the game. Well, if there's one time that A&M could even out that momentum and even out that energy, why not the first minutes coming into the fourth quarter after the entirety just about of NRG Stadium just got done doing the war hymn, and all the players had been out on the field waiting for the commercial break to come back, and they're looking around at the entire stadium swaying and everything like that. If there's ever a time for any team to go for it on fourth down and have some momentum and have some energy, I would say it's then. Because you have for the one time other than right at the beginning of the game for A&M football team, you feel like and you can tangibly see that the stands have your back. They're behind you and they are into the game now because of that. Go for it, man.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations too. You need a lot of momentum, I think. And at the beginning of the game, you're talking about as far as getting pumped up, A&M looked great on that first drive.
Sure.
Trevor Knight looked great on that first drive. But it's happened several times throughout the year, and it happened again. Knight has a great first drive, and then he cools off after that. And he looked pretty bad the rest of that first half. The second half, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I don't think that that was the biggest flaw in that game. I don't think that that game was completely decided or the momentum completely shifted by A&M going for a 52-yard field goal instead of going for it on fourth down. I think there were a lot of other things, a lot of other additives to it. And another thing to take mention of, I guess, is Knight looks so good on that first drive. A&M looks pretty good on that first drive offensively. And you got a guy, a running back, and Keith Ford, who's averaging, what, 7 yards a carry?
Mm-hmm.
And you give the ball to him how many times? A little over 10? Something like
yeah.
that? Keep feeding that dude. I mean, Keith Ford has never run like he didn't want to be there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a guy who runs angry with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not utilize that. And Trevor Knight ends up throwing the ball, what, 41 times?
Mm-hmm.
40-plus times? I think that they kind of went away from what was working. And offensively, like I was talking about, Knight has all these great first drives. The offense has all these great first drives, but then the defense is able to move around and to readjust, but the Aggie offense never does.
Right.
And so then they end up getting stopped.
Well, a quick side note here, doing some work just on some of the record book stuff now that the season is recapped, and where does Trevor Knight – I think we kind of mentally have a picture of where he falls amongst A&M quarterbacks and whatnot. And, you know, he was kind of a guy who came in here, provided some leadership for a year and is getting out of there, and he'll probably be a guy that, you know – is a note along things, but no one really grasps what he did on the field. He comes in at number 20 all time in passing yards for A&M all time history. He is in the record books.
Well, you definitely have to look as far as where A&M has been in previous years, and
sure.
I mean, when you're talking about a different day and age. Also, that's something to keep in mind, too, when you're talking about a different day and age, when you had guys who would stay all 4 years.
Sure.
And play. And to be able to do that within 1 year, yeah, it is impressive. But it also is a very much different game.
Sure.
And but where I think fans will remember Trevor Knight. I think they'll remember him a lot for what he was off the field,
mm-hmm.
as much as he was on the field. They'll remember him as a good guy that went out and competed. I think that he really went out and gave 110% every day. But they're not going to remember him as this fantastic, you know, performer. He was a good leader. He was a good guy. But as far as on the epsilon of things, he's not going to be that high up.
Sure. Well, we have some a little bit less depressing things to talk. Well, I guess it depends on the perspective.
Yeah. How depressed can you get?
It's sad for A&M fans that, yes, the kind of best the favorite child of Aggieland, Myles Garrett, is moving on to the NFL. But we will get deeper into the head of Myles Garrett by talking to his high school coach, Bob Wager, from Arlington Martin, next on the My Aggie Nation podcast. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown here, sitting across from Zach Taylor, and we have a very special guest on the line here. Well, probably one of the premier high school football coaches up in the North Texas area, probably in the state, and that is Arlington Martin head coach Bob Wager. Coach, thanks for jumping on with us this week.
Travis, my pleasure. Thank you for the kind words, sir.
You got it. Now, the connection that Coach Wager has here with A&M and Aggieland is he was the high school coach for one Myles Garrett, who just announced that he is foregoing his senior season and going to go into NFL draft, as I think many people assumed that he would. And Coach, as you look back on Myles Garrett's college career, which I know you follow all of your players that go on to the college game and kind of keep an eye on them and what has going on, what have you seen and what did you see from him in his college career?
Well, to be honest with you, Travis, it was really a very steady continuation of his high school career. You know, a lot of the things that we looked at in wonderment that Myles was able to do at the high school level really just carried over. And that's, you know, an unbelievably quick first couple of steps. Elasticity beyond comparison. His ability to shed blocks and bend like Gumby, and then just his, you know, his fierce motor, and those were all things that we saw when he was a Martin Warrior, and obviously proud that he was able to carry on to the next level, and certainly excited about the possibility that he continues to be able to dominate in those areas at the NFL level as well, and I believe he will.
Sure. I think what people were mainly enamored with Miles here at A&M is his character and kind of the guy he was off the field, a little bit of just a high character guy, and that sometimes that's not as common or to the level that that Miles Garrett was. Do you have a story or something that sticks out to you, the thinking back when you people kind of ask you about him as a person and as to describe his character and his high character?
Yeah, I think so, and I think the best way to describe that is the fact that he was very, and still is, continues to be very, very genuine. I can't think of a human being in Southwest Arlington that didn't love Miles Garrett. And you know, you walk through the hallways of 3,400 students, and oftentimes you see different groups and cliques and Miles was not really part of any of them, but more a part of all of them. I mean, everybody loved him, and I think that was a result of him showing that same love, and it didn't matter if, you know, you were the tuba player in the band or on the competitive science team or a member of the athletic program. He just, you know, he was the same Miles and treated everybody exactly the same, and I think that's exactly what he's continued to do.
Now, in talking about that, Coach, I mean, Miles is a little bit different in the fact that he doesn't have social media. He's a 70s music kind of guy. But the social media part, I'm sure as a high school head coach, that can drive you nuts at times with the guys and as far as what they can do with social media and things like that. And how does it strike you when a player announces, hey, I'm not going to do any of that stuff. I'm not going to tweet. I'm not going to be on Facebook. I'm just going to completely stay away from social media.
Well, Zach, I mean, really, I think those two things, what we just talked about, his genuine character and how real he is, you know, as social media has continued to become more and more prevalent in kids, I've seen a general drop in their ability to communicate via eye contact or talking, listening, just general communication skills. I think it's diminished as a result of, you know, the ability to have instant gratification on social media. And I think those two things go hand in hand. You know, Miles is so real and he values so much the genuine one-on-one conversation. I think he, you know, not to put words in his mouth, but I think he probably finds that to be more gratifying than, you know, talking about what he had for lunch every day, you know, and so it's refreshing, and obviously it's been impactful with some of our guys, and you know I'm using that as an example with the players that I'm coaching today.
I think for a lot of us, it was a foregone conclusion that this would be the year that Miles would make that jump to the NFL. Did he confide in you or seek your counsel at all for his decision-making process in that this past year or even before that? And when, if you can share, when did he kind of come to that decision?
No, that was, you know, there's been a lot of things that Miles and I have continued to talk about throughout the course of the last 3 years, but that was not one of them. You know, as ironic as it is, when Miles and I text and when Miles and I talk, football is typically the last thing that we discuss. You know, Miles Garrett is a guy that, to kind of go back to the character aspect of it, I had an opportunity to coach Miles in the Under Armour All-America game a few years ago, and I have young children, and we didn't tell the kids that we were going to Disney World and going to coach the game, and Miles actually showed up on the doorstep Christmas Day and brought my son and my daughter a Mickey Mouse and a Minnie Mouse doll and let them know we were all going to Disney World together, you know. So to be honest with you, as exciting as I am, you know, for Miles and his potential draft status and all those things, you know, when I talk to him, I'd much rather talk about, you know, whatever dinosaur interest is happening in his life or what's happening with his family or my family or whatever. I care much more about the human than I do about the football side.
Now, you're talking about the dinosaurs, Coach. Is that something that was brought up a lot in the locker room with him?
Oh, my goodness gracious, yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, thanks to Miles, I learned a lot about dinosaurs.
Wow.
Because he certainly didn't ever hesitate to share his enthusiasm about that. And I know that gets a lot of the buzz. But I'll tell you what was amazing was was seeing a young man 16, 17 years old when we would sit down and talk about team goals and individual goals and future goals, and Miles share his hopes and dreams of humanitarian efforts. You know, that's, I think, impressive for any human being, but certainly to be able to recognize that that was an aspiration when he was 16 and 17 years old, that was borderline mind-boggling.
And that proved itself or showed itself again this year when he kind of took some time out of one of his press conferences to plead for Haitian relief after that hurricane hit Haiti earlier this year and kind of spread through social media. And I think they even showed a video in Kyle Field kind of making that plea as well. So it's definitely something that is carried on with him. And, you know, it's funny, you talk about all this stuff and it seems like so long ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. In fact, when I pulled up my phone for us to give you a call, there was a picture popped up of you'd sent me from you and Miles at the Under Armour All-American game just what? Four years ago?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the world is starting to see the things like the, you know, like the statements on Haiti and the press conference and the different things, and what I think most want your listeners to understand is that this is not a new this is not a new phenomenon that all of a sudden Miles Garrett has figured out the right things to say and the right way to play.
Mm-hmm.
This is genuinely who he is, and it's always been who he is.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot more people hearing about it now than there were back then.
That is true. Well, speaking of the Under Armour All-American game, that was somewhere you were out there, the defensive coordinator for Team Highlight, working with a lot of the best athletes in the country. And one of the guys that you got to work with really closely was linebacker Levi Jones out of Austin Westlake, a guy who has A&M on his radar as a possible destination for his college career. What did you see in Levi, and what kind of stood out to you about him?
Well, the first was just what a joy he was to coach. That was the most exciting thing is, you know, you go into a situation like that, and you've got 50 players on your team, and in a four-day period of time, you're trying to learn everybody's name and, you know, get a little bit of information in regards to their background. And he was, you know, again, kind of go back to the things we talked about before, great handshake, great eye contact, which to me goes a long way, the ability to maintain a conversation and a genuine interest in, you know, where one another were from and what we were all about. But then the thing that continued to impress me along the week, or along the course of the week, is, you know, imagine Travis, you're talking the best of the best, you know. So what separates those top few from what is the rest of it? And ultimately, they're all, you know, terrifically talented. For me to say, you know, one is more talented than the other, a group of 50 of the very best football players in the country is very difficult. What separated Levi and what excited me so much about the opportunity to coach Levi was his practice habits. You know, he's a guy that it doesn't take long to realize he genuinely loves playing football. And I'm not just talking about the game. I'm talking about every individual drill, every unit drill. It was a practice session that would last about 3 hours long. It was 85 degrees and muggy there in Orlando. And he didn't want to get off the field for practice. And so, you know, for an all-star game, that is a bit unusual and a bit unique. And I think that's why we hit it off so well.
Arlington Martin, head football coach Bob Wager. Coach, thank you so very much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Good luck throughout this offseason and going into next season.
Thank you, Zach. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
All right.
Have a great week.
You too, Coach. Thanks. And that'll wrap up our segment with Coach Wager. Again, a big thanks to him coming on. Of course, he was a head coach for Miles Garrett up in Arlington Martin whenever Garrett was a player, a big-time star for the Warriors up there, and was also an assistant, as we talked about just a minute ago, at the Under Armour All-American game down in Orlando. And so he has some real insight, a real feel for the high school game and some high school talent. Guys, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will turn our attention to Aggie Hoops. Or lack thereof. We'll talk about that in a minute. You're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis L. Brown. A very abbreviated, abrupt version of the college football pick'em this week because there's only one game left.
One game.
Unless we're counting the FCS championship game.
One game to rule them all.
Which
now.
Is Youngstown State and somebody else. I mean, I just know Bo's in it. So that's
North Dakota State isn't in it, so you know, like, who cares?
Nobody cares. Right. But yeah, the big one, the Division I national championship between Alabama and Clemson. Boy, both of those teams look real, real good.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at this, I say, which program do I believe is in more stable condition right now? And which program do I believe will have better quarterback play?
Ooh, I know where you're going with this.
Both of those are Clemson.
Yeah.
Because Bama, and it might have been mutual, it might not have. I imagine that Nick Saban told Lane Kiffin to go kick rocks. I think that's probably how that went down. Lane Kiffin just finally broke the last straw, put the last straw on the camel's back, however that saying goes. You know what I'm talking about. And Nick Saban said, all right, get up out of here. And then now he's going to have Steve Sarkisian, a.k.a. Mr. Nose Picker. Nose Picker is going to be coming down from the booth and going to be on the sideline, I guess. So how does that work out? You've got Jalen Hurts, who's a very talented guy, but at the same time is a true freshman. Let's not forget that. He's a true freshman. He's going to be under a new offensive coordinator. Something just seems off about all of that to me. It really does.
Yeah.
And Bama's still going to have a great defense. Bo Scarborough is still a grown man. But I think Clemson, Deshaun Watson, after last year, he's coming for blood, baby. And Dabo don't pull no punches, know what I'm saying?
I like me some Dabo. Now, the interesting whole big picture storyline that you can take from this is, like, you have this little Alabama-Clemson thing kind of going on here over the past couple of years of them being good and everything, and would not be out of the realm of possibility here in a couple of years if Nick Saban decides that he has had enough and wants to retire, that good old Dabo takes over there in Tuscaloosa. So
I imagine that's exactly how that's going to
happen. That's a little bit of an interesting wrinkle in that whole thing.
Played at Alabama, from Alabama.
Right. So I get where you're coming from. I understand those storylines going on, and I understand how they can play a part in the game. I mean, we were talking about energy in the Rodeo Bowl before the Texas Bowl and how that played into it. I get that. But let's not forget who these teams are. One is Clemson, and Clemson Clemsons.
Yeah.
Clemson does not rise to the occasion in the big game, in the big moment, and they have yet to prove that they can do that. I mean, you can kind of argue that the game last week was a little bit of that, but it was a semifinal. It wasn't the championship. They made it to the championship recently.
It was still pretty big, though.
It was big, but
it was pretty solidifying. And I'll tell you what, and I kind of agree with you as far as the X's and O's. Clemson has looked very vulnerable at times this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, NC State, Louisville. I mean, there have been times where you're thinking, oh, man, Clemson might not be that good.
Mm-hmm.
But after you...
We were wondering it before, when A&M was going in to play Auburn, and Auburn had beat or hung with Clemson, and wondering how good that Auburn team was or how good the Clemson team
was.
By
the way, that Auburn team is still not very good.
No.
They're still not very good. And they shouldn't have been in the Sugar Bowl. They shouldn't have been ranked 14th.
Right.
That's an argument for a different time. But Dabo and company put the hurt on Urban Meyer. I was not expecting that whatsoever. I don't know if anybody expected that. And you could say, well, the media was a little high on the Big Ten because you look at their bowl record, ain't very good. And Ohio State might not be that good. But, man, Clemson looked good in that ball game. And Deshaun Watson, you don't think that doesn't stick in his craw a little bit that he lost 45-40 to Bama last year? He's got a shot at redemption now.
Yeah.
That being said, I'll let you finish. I'm going to let you finish, but you're wrong.
But, yeah, I'm going to go with Alabama. I had Alabama penciled in from, like, week four, I think, on picking games.
Typical SEC homer.
Yeah, that SEC bias from the first year SEC reporter. But yeah, I'm gonna. I just think Alabama is too complete of a team. They have that well-oiled machine running too well, and it's gonna be Alabama in that one. You segue me because this has been the show of segues.
Segue
into something I'm gonna throw on you on the spot here on the air live on a podcast.
Oh man.
Question that kind of went out on Twitter a little bit during that Sugar Bowl game the other night. So, power rank the conferences, now that you've seen it all.
Power rank
the conferences.
We're getting into a little Twitter spat with our buddy Lee Benson, who is now covering the Oklahoma Sooners
right
up there in Okie City. If I'm ranking them, gosh. ACCs look pretty good, have they not?
I mean, you have to take regular season and bowl, because a bowl is just
right,
one game.
Right. You know, I think I'd put ACC first this year. I think the ACC has been pretty dang good. If we're talking regular season, Big Ten would be second. And I think the SEC squeaks out the Big 12 by just a hair, because the Big 12 has Iowa State and
Kansas.
And yeah, Kansas, and your Horned Frogs didn't do too hot either. I think the Big 12 and SEC were almost neck and neck this year. I really do, because the SEC was down. They were. And Auburn, like I talked about earlier, Auburn had no business. Florida should have been in the Sugar Bowl. I don't know why Auburn was in it, but that's my thought process.
We pretty much are the same. I still want to go. Yes, they had a pretty terrible bowl season, but I still think the Big Ten overall was the best conference from top to bottom.
Indiana did pretty well. They almost beat Utah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Utah State, sorry. So yeah. I don't want to get that one wrong.
Yeah. A little bit of a difference, but I'll go Big Ten, then ACC, then SEC, Big 12, and Pac 12 as far as the Power Fives go.
Yeah, Pac 12 was down pretty bad, boy. And who thought Washington State was going to get stomped by Minnesota?
Right, with all the ridiculousness that was going on with their players and their administration, and still going on with that. So maybe that's something we can get into.
Hey, coach got let go. So.
Yeah, we get into it in later weeks. But we need to pivot from football, because football season is over, and move into basketball season, which is something that maybe A&M fans might not quite want to make that pivot
yet. We're playing basketball.
The Aggies this season are 8-5, and that being said, they have dropped their first two SEC contests this year. One to that Kentucky, which probably most people would have, you know, penciled in maybe as an L, but the other one to Tennessee, which I don't think people might have penciled in as an L to start out the season at Reed Arena. Doesn't seem like this is the kind of start that the Aggies want for conference play.
No, it's not. And you look at it, they have played some very good teams early. I'll give them credit. USC, they played down to the wire. Of course, that was here at Reed. I think that's a game they should have won. They played UCLA very, very close. And the Bruins are one of the best teams in the nation right now. And they also almost came back against Arizona. That being said, that was all at neutral sites. Sort of. UCLA, I guess you could have counted as a home game because it was in L.A. or Anaheim or whatever. But those were in neutral site games, except for the home game against USC. When you come back out of the break, and I don't know if it's because of the break, I think that would have to have something to do with it, right? When you've had that much time off, you come back, you got a pretty good crowd against Tennessee the other night, by the way, and you just lay a goose egg in the second half. And I'll tell you what, a big testament to Rick Barnes, because he knew exactly how to play A&M, and he did it. He played it like a musician. I mean, like freaking Bach.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Calipari knows how to play him. Plus, he's got all the talent.
Right.
So you go from Tennessee, which you could say outcoached you, to Kentucky, which outcoached you and outplayed you, and it made for a very, very, very ugly game. And again, I don't think a lot of people had A&M pegged to win that game. I don't think A&M went into that game thinking that they were going to lose, though. I don't think that it was one of those deals where, oh, man, Kentucky's just too good. They've beaten Kentucky at Kentucky before, and they played them very, very close. Of course, last year they went to OT in both games that they played down here and then, of course, in the SEC tournament. So a lot of those games have been very, very close. Last night was just a bloodbath, and it wasn't just bad basketball. It was dumb basketball, dumb passes, dumb mistakes. They had umpteen jillion turnovers last night, which is kind of different than what they had. I think they've been averaging 12 turnovers per game, and last night they
like
had
17.
25. Oh. 25 turnovers last night. They had 12 within the first half. And it was normally a Billy Kennedy team will be pretty good defensively. Offense is where they've had their struggles in the past. Last night it was on both ends. It was bad. It was bad.
You have Tyler Davis, who's leading the team in points per game at 14.2. But from everything that I've seen this season, they while he is leading the team in points and they are working it into him in the post, they're not doing it enough. Because that's going to be their strength this season is Tyler Davis.
Well, their strength obviously is their size inside, but the problem is that all the other teams know that too. And Tyler Davis being just one guy, if you've got him double teamed underneath, if you really hone in on him, you can take him out of the equation. I think Tennessee showed that, and Kentucky to somewhat. He still scored 13 points. He still kind of got his due, but you need some help from the outside. You need help from the perimeter. DJ Hoke's supposed to be that guy. After having arguably his best game of the season against Tennessee, he had his worst game of the year last night. It was bad. A lot of turnovers, bad passes from his part, and he was cold shooting. He was really cold. I think he was 1 of 7 from the floor last night. And so they need him. This is one of those situations in which it's a young team, as opposed to last year when it was a very veteran team. So now you got to rely on these young, talented guys. Can they get it done for you? And so far, they haven't been able to do
it. And I think the guy that really they need to lean on when Tyler Davis is being double-teamed, taken out of the equation, is Tony Trochimorelos, a guy with size who can work not only from the outside but work the inside as well. He's averaging 8.3 points per game with the second highest minutes per game at 25.5. Just not the production that they need from him. He needs to be one of the top three scorers on this team.
Well, Tony in the past has been a number six guy, and I think he's been a good six guy. But as a starter, as a guy who's going to be putting in all those valuable minutes, and I don't think he has the beef. It's one of those things that everybody's been kind of waiting for him to fill out, and he's gotten bigger. But his body shape just is, he's not Tyler Davis. He's kind of more sticky, you know, if that makes sense. He's you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like a praying mantis.
Yes.
And so you can only put so much muscle on him, and having him as a force on the inside, I don't think is going to – I just don't see it working out. I don't know if he has the ability to shift his way around those big 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot, 260-pound dudes on the inside like Kentucky's and a lot of folks have.
Definitely. Well, that is the kind of 35,000-foot view of the beginning of the Texas A&M season, as we've been so focused on the A&M football team, and I'm sure there will be plenty more basketball conversations here on out for the My Aggie Nation podcast.
And speaking of basketball, by the way, guard play. We didn't even mention that, guard play is the biggest one because they don't have a true point.
That is true.
And Admon Gilder is doing everything that he can, but it's not working right now.
That is true. That is true. Well, the Aggie basketball team has games against South Carolina, LSU, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Two on the road, two at home coming up on the schedule. Might be a little bit of a swing where they can get their feet back under them going through conference play. So that'll do it for us this week on the My Aggie Nation podcast. A big thanks to Arlington Martin head coach Bob Wager for coming on to let us into the background, the mind of Miles Garrett a little bit as he declared for the NFL draft this week. As always, a big thanks to the president, Zachary Taylor. It was good to be back in the studio this week to do the podcast. This weekend, not a whole lot going on. If you want something to do Aggie-related, you can tune into that Army All-American game. A&M has one commit in there, defensive lineman Jaden Peavy from Houston Bel Air. Might check out what he does in that game. So, we will be back next week to talk about who knows what, basketball, wall crosses, anything, as we do here on the My Aggie Nation podcast. For Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week here on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. And if we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't want to make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't want to make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be, all that we can be.